This is a special Millennials edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest financial planner this hour will discuss issues facing people in their 20s and 30s, including buying a first house, a car, saving for retirement, and getting the financial house in order. And as always, we will welcome your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Sophia Barra, a certified financial planner in Minneapolis, where she focuses on helping people in their 20s and 30s. She's also an adjunct faculty member at her alma mater, Minnesota State University, Mankato. And she is a member of the Financial Education Committee for the Financial Planning Association of Minnesota. Her website is genyplanning.com. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Joy. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, let's talk about you first. I understand you went to college to major in theater and women's studies. How did you wind up becoming a certified financial planner?
Yeah, that's my kind of my funny story here. I thought that I'd be a performer. I love theater. I did theater from a really young age. And I really, you know, I enjoyed performing. But I really had this idea in my mind that I wanted to buy a house when I graduated from college. So I would sit in the personal finance section of Barnes & Noble and read all of the money books and business books that I could get my hands on. And in that process, I started realizing that there was a lot of things about money and personal finance that I didn't know and that I wasn't learning in college. And so I decided when I graduated, to buy a home. And then as my friends kept coming to me for money questions, I decided, hey, I think I'm going to go back and get my CFP and become a certified financial planner so that I can help other people like myself learn about money and get a handle on their money while they're younger so that they can make better decisions with their money throughout their life.
We'll talk a little bit more about that house you bought in a second, but why aren't there more financial advisors for people who are in their 20s and 30s?
That's a great question. You know, I think a lot of it, as I said, I really got into this industry because I wanted to help people like myself. And then once I was in this industry, realized, wow, there are all these great financial planners, but they're really geared towards baby boomers and beyond. There wasn't a lot of people out there helping people in their 20s, 30s, and even their 40s. So one of the reasons is because the way we've traditionally charged for financial planning is on assets under management. So you have to have a certain amount of assets, such as $500,000, for a lot of financial planners to want to work with you. And so I decided to kind of shake up the model a little bit and change the way that I charge. And I think there's a lot more financial planners changing the way they charge, whether it's hourly, a fee for advice, whether it's an initial planning fee and then a monthly planning amount like I charge, or other people that are doing some combinations of income and net worth. So there's a lot of different ways that people are approaching the financial planning field now, which I think is a really big benefit. And it's not just focused on, you know, managing this large sum of money and then just throwing in the financial advice for free. Instead, it's, you know, really seeing the value of comprehensive financial planning and charging for those services, whether or not people have assets or not, so that they can learn to make the best decisions as they grow their wealth.
So do people in their 20s and 30s have any assets?
You know, it's surprising. Quite a few do. And I think that's because our generation has really seen our parents go through a lot of ups and downs. We've been through, you know, two stock market declines. The tech stocks crashed right before a lot of us went to college, or as a few of us were going to college. And then the stock market downturn of you know, 2008. So I think that there is a heightened awareness of people's money and wanting to make good decisions with our money, because we saw our families struggle, or maybe they did make a great decision, and we want to be able to help our children and teach those skills to our children. Or maybe they struggled with money, and we want to make sure that we're in a better financial position so that we can help our families out someday.
So what do you think is the most important thing that your generation, the millennials, should know about their finances?
I think I really focus on building a solid financial foundation, and that consists of a few things. The first is eliminating high-interest credit card debt or staying out of credit card debt completely. So if you don't have any credit card debt now, great, keep it that way. And if you do, really figure out a plan to get out of credit card debt right away, because the interest rates are so high that that really hurts you long-term in terms of building long-term wealth. The second is building that emergency fund, and that's the best way to stay out of credit card debt, is having some money set aside for emergencies. And you know, this can start small at first, maybe a $500 or $1,000 set aside, but eventually having 3 to 6 months of income set aside for emergencies is really helpful. And then the third thing I would tell young people is to really start saving for retirement right away. So with that first job that you get out of college, if your employer offers a 401k plan with a company match, signing up for that plan right away and contributing at least enough to get that company match, because if you don't, you're leaving free money on the table.
What about student loan debt? Is that a big issue?
You know, it really is. I'm seeing a lot more people with student loan debt. And so it really varies. I'm seeing two things. So one is that there's a lot more people getting, you know, law degrees, MBAs. So people are accumulating a lot more debt, not just from undergrad, but also from these graduate programs. And there's definitely a lot of people that are coming to me for strategies in terms of, you know, which student loans to pay off first. How do we balance the student loan debt while saving for other goals, such as a down payment on a house? And then I am seeing, you know, people come to me as well that were fortunate enough to get scholarships, have their parents help them through school, and don't have any student loan debt, and are therefore really able to, you know, start building their emergency savings, start, you know, getting that money socked away for retirement, saving for that first home. So it's really kind of split between people who really don't have any, you know, student loan debt, and then people who are really trying to figure out a plan to manage their student loan debt.
I'm wondering how receptive young people are, people in their 20s and 30s, to socking away money for retirement. Is that a message getting through?
You know, I think that it is. There's been a lot of people in the press coming out saying, you know, that millennials, how could they, you know, they don't really care about retirement, or it's so far away. But the people that I'm seeing, I think that there's quite a few people that are saying, hey, I really want to make great choices with my money now, even if I don't have a lot of money now. So how can I start making those choices today so that I can save, you know, a few hundred dollars a month, so that by the time I'm in my 40s or 50s, I already have a nest egg there, and I don't have to start saving in my 30s or 40s. So I do think that people are starting to save for retirement younger, and I hope that that trend continues. That's just what I'm seeing in my practice. I think that we do have a lot of competing financial goals, so that's always one of the challenges, is to how much money do we set away for retirement versus how much do we use to, you know, save for those other financial goals. But I do think that it's a priority for a lot of millennials.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sophia Barra. She's a certified financial planner in Minneapolis, where she focuses on helping people in their 20s and 30s. Generation Y. Her website is genyplanning.com. And we welcome your question, especially if you're someone in your 20s or 30s, But if you are, maybe you're the parent of someone in their 20s and 30s, and you might have a question. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Have you bought or are you considering buying your first house? A car or another major purchase? What questions do you have about saving for retirement? What would you like to ask our guest? By the way, Kevin McKinley will be back next week. Our regular financial planner is on vacation this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Money, money. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sophia Berra today, a certified financial planner in Minneapolis, where she focuses on helping people in their 20s and 30s. She's also an adjunct faculty member at her alma mater, Minnesota State University, Mankato. Our number, if you have a question for her, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have a number of people who are calling in, Sophia, but let me ask you about that house you bought right after you graduated from college. You bought it in 2005 for $189,000. Yet you regretted that decision?
You know, that was a tough one. It was one of those things where I really learned a lot from that experience. And I think that, it's really worked out. It's working out now. But there are so many things that I learned from that experience. I should have put a larger down payment down. I maybe shouldn't have bought a house that was quite that expensive on my current salary at the time. And, I was really buying at a time when the market was already pretty high. So looking back, I wish that I would have waited a little bit longer till I was more financially secure and until real estate had come down a bit. And I could really get something that I was going to be in long term.
Yeah. Well, what advice might you have for someone in their 20s or 30s who wants to buy their first home and with the current market?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think that, it's the biggest mistake that I see a lot of people make is to save up this down payment, but not save up emergency savings as well. So they used all of their savings to use as a down payment on their home. But what happens a lot of times is there's things that, repairs that need to be made or things that need to be fixed in a house. You have these extra responsibilities all of a sudden. And so it's really hard to be able to do those repairs when you raided your emergency fund in order to purchase the home. So I would say, being able to put a down payment on a home but keep, 3 to 6 months in emergency savings is really important at the same time.
Let's go to the phones. Mary in Milwaukee is with us first. Hello, Mary.
Hello. So I was wondering, what percentage of your income do you suggest putting towards retirement monthly? And then my husband and I have a significant amount of student loan debt, as well as we recently bought a house. And so I was wondering, do you recommend, is there one that's more important to pay off extra each month or to pay a little extra on each equally?
Yeah, that's a great question. Do you have private student loans or just federal student loans?
I have grad plus loans, so I think they're both federal, but one's more higher interest rate.
Okay. So the first thing that I usually recommend is to, if you do have private loans, to pay those off first, because
okay.
They don't have the types of loan programs that federal student loan programs have available, such as the ability to defer if one of you were to get laid off, things like that. So it's great, first of all, that you just have the federal loans because there are a lot of different loan programs available. The next thing I would suggest is to make sure that you're on the right repayment plan for your federal student loans. So there's a bunch of different programs out there now. So to take a look at, if you do have a significant amount of student loans, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which is where your student loans could actually be forgiven after 10 years if you were working for either a school district or a government agency. That's a really great program for a lot of people that have a high amount of student loan debt. And then if that's not available to you, there are other things as well. So there's pay-as-you-earn, there's income-based repayment programs. So one of those programs might be something to consider, especially while you're juggling these other financial priorities right now as well. And then I would say at least make sure for retirement you're doing enough to get your company matches at work if you do have a company match through your employer. You know, I usually recommend trying to put 10% of your income away while you're young for retirement. Sometimes that's easier for people, sometimes that's harder for people, and it really depends on your specific situation. But those are just a few rough guidelines to start with, is, you know, making sure you attack those private student loans first, making sure you're on the right repayment plan for federal student loans, and then contributing enough to get your company match for retirement.
Do you have any thoughts as to whether you should try to pay down the mortgage faster than usual compared to these other, you know, in terms of paying down the student loans faster?
Yeah, because interest rates are so low on mortgages right now, I'm generally not recommending that people try to pay down their mortgage faster. Usually their student loans right now are actually at a higher rate. Those are at around 6.8%. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing is that if you're on one of those specialized programs, such as, you know, income-based repayment, then I would say, you know, don't pay extra on that income-based repayment because the balance will actually be forgiven after a set number of years. You will have to pay taxes on that money, though, so that is something to be aware of. However, if you're just on a standard 10-year repayment for your student loans and they're at 6.8% or even higher and you want to pay them off faster, go for it. I think that's a great place to put extra money towards, is getting rid of that student loan debt after you've paid off those high-interest credit cards. You know, if you have any high-interest credit cards, pay those off first.
How's that sound, Mary?
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the call. Our next caller is Chris in Eau Claire. Hello, Chris.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling. What question do you have?
My question is trying to figure out whether I should either buy or continue on renting a house after, you know, I'm starting out a brand new job. I'm a resident physician right now, and I'm going to be transitioning to becoming an attending physician. However, I still have a good amount of student loans to pay. My last job interview, basically a real estate agent took me out on a tour, and I asked them whether I should buy or rent, and of course, you know, said, you know, the housing market is a lot better today. Prices are still at an all-time low. It's a good time to buy. And I was still just really uncomfortable about, you know, buying, you know, and starting another mortgage on top of, you know, a good amount of student loans that I still have.
Yeah, so any thoughts on whether, and this is Dr. Chris, should buy or rent with this new job he's taken on?
Yeah. Chris, do you know how long you plan to be at that specific hospital? Do you think you might be moving, or do you think you might be staying long term, or any initial thoughts?
To tell the truth, I really have no idea yet. You know, it was one of my first few interviews, and it's a good idea. But I figured, you know, this might be a recurring theme that I'll have with other interviews that, you know, that I'll be going into. So I would say, at the very least, you know, staying in there for 3 to 5 years.
Okay. So I think that you're absolutely right to be hesitant towards buying a home right now, especially, like you said, you don't know exactly what the next, you know, after the next few years, are you going to want to take a job at another clinic or hospital in another location? And so I think that what I'm seeing is millennials are really valuing mobility more than, you know, having that home purchase, because what happens is it can really limit you in terms of taking advantage of those job opportunities in other states or cities or other areas that, you know, aren't where your home is. So I would say for now, when you decide on the job that you're going to take, rent for a year, see how you like it, get to know the city, get to know the area that you're in. And the other thing is that sometimes I see people jump into buying homes in new areas where they're not as familiar with. And then once they live there a year or two and kind of get to know the area more, they wish they would have bought in another neighborhood, or they wish they would have bought in a different suburb. So I would say you're absolutely right to be hesitant for purchasing right away, and that a great route for you could be renting for a year, seeing how you like the area, and also taking some time, like you said, to really figure out how are these student loans going to impact your lifestyle right now, and not having to juggle a mortgage on top of that.
Good luck, Chris. Thank you so much for the call. This is a millennials edition of On Your Money. Talking today with Sophia Berra, a certified financial planner in Minneapolis. Her website is genyplanning.com. She focuses on helping people in their 20s and 30s with personal finance issues, including buying a first house, a car, saving for retirement, managing debt, and getting the financial house in order. And we're welcoming any questions you might have. Are you in your 20s and 30s trying to get your fiscal house in order? 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have? Or maybe you're the parent of some millennials and you're listening and have some questions. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Dawn in Saukville. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, and thank you so much for this program. I am the parent of five millennials.
Wow.
Ranging from the age of 26 down to 18. And I tried to have my children follow by example, along with doing all the things I thought was right with setting up Roth IRAs for them when they were young and things like that. However, I'm finding out that it's a little discouraging because one or two seem to be straying the other way. And, you know, when it comes to mother's advice, they don't want to listen. I'm just wondering if Sophia has some recommendations from those people, young millennials that she's talked to, and how they became interested in wanting to save for retirement. I somehow seem to be missing the boat here. And then a second question that came to mind while you were talking to the last gentleman is, I thought as far as buying that first house is maybe thinking of it as a future investment property such as a duplex where maybe you live in it for a while and decide, you know, that's the home you want or don't want, but it's a learning lesson. And later on, if it's not the house you just, you know, desire, it ends up being an investment property for the future that jumps into your permanent house using that as an investment.
Well, let's get to the first question first to Sophia. Mom's trying to get her kids to care about, you know, saving for retirement and the like, and not succeeding, at least with a couple. Any advice?
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say, you know, what a wonderful mom to set up Roth IRAs for your child and really help them get a great start. I think that a lot of parents aren't sure what to do, and it sounds like you did a really good job. And so I just want to say, first of all, great job there. And then second of all, you know, sometimes it's easier for young people to listen to people that are maybe just a few years older than them or a decade older than them. So if you have people in your children's life, maybe a godparent or a older sibling talking to one of the younger siblings or a family friend that can just kind of start having those conversations with your children as a mentor and as another adult figure, but not a parent, I think that those conversations can be really helpful in opening up the lines of communication and kind of steering people on the right track, you know, in all different areas of life, not just money. So that's maybe one thing that I would suggest is maybe encourage those other adults in your children's life to, you know, to welcome those conversations with money with your children.
And what about buying a first home as an investment property, perhaps even a duplex that you might rent out?
Yeah, I think that was a great suggestion. I think that duplexes, the really nice thing about owner-occupied duplexes is that you can often qualify if you're going to be living there as an for a better rate on a mortgage than you would with a traditional investment property. And so that can be one of the really great benefits. And then, like the reader said, or like the caller said, you know, being able to have that as a rental unit that's paying for part of the mortgage, and then if you do decide to move someday, keeping that as an investment property or selling it at a later date, I think that it does give you a lot more options than you'd have with a traditional single-family home. So I think that's another option to consider as well. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yes, thank you, Dawn, for the call. So, Sophia, do you still have the home you bought in 2005, or did you move on from there?
I do. It's actually a rental property.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So my husband and I, when we decided we wanted to move out of the inner city and into a suburb, we decided to keep it as a rental property for a while. So that's what we're currently doing. And we actually have plans to someday buy a duplex. So we're thinking about all of these things, too. And I think that you're seeing a lot more millennials want to buy duplexes or rental properties as their first home because it does give them that flexibility.
We are talking about your money, your millennial money. We are talking with a guest who specializes in helping Generation Y, or the millennials, people in their 20s and 30s. And we're wondering if you are in your 20s and 30s and if you have any personal finance questions. 1-800-642-1234. We do have an open line for you. I'm guessing maybe we have more parents of 20 and 30-year-olds listening right now. Let us know if there's some advice that Sophia can give your children through you. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, let's talk a little bit about buying that first car, Sophia. You advise that we should never buy a brand new car? Why not?
Well, new cars lose money the second you drive them off the lot. They're worth a couple $1,000s less than when you just bought it. So one of the things is that I don't like investing money in anything that's a depreciating asset, and cars are really one of them. So I really think you can get a much better deal on, a slightly used car or an older vehicle, and it can keep your payments low, or you could pay cash for the car. And this really frees up a lot of cash to be able to use in other areas of your life that do provide you more value.
Mm. I do see that some car lots have deals where you get 0% interest on a loan on a new car. What if you get a deal like that?
You know, those deals can be really tempting. And the problem with a lot of those is that you're still actually paying a little bit higher for the value of the car. So you're actually they're kind of wrapping that interest that you would be paying on the car loan into that price of the vehicle. The other thing to watch out for is, taking out a car loan that's 5 or 6 years when, that's a long time to be kind of committed to that purchase. And so I usually recommend, 3 or 4 year car loans, or no car loan at all if you can swing it. We love the 0% interest, and low rates are great, and it is really wonderful when you can, be able to have that money to use towards other areas. But I still think that, it's just one of those things that new cars are not the best way, they're a depreciating asset, so it's not the best place to put your money, even though the interest rate's really tempting.
Yeah. We'll get to more questions for Sophia Barra, certified financial planner in Minneapolis, where she focuses on helping people in their 20s and 30s. Her website is genyplanning.com. And we have that posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. If you would like to ask a question, you can post a question there. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. And if you don't have a question for our guest about money matters for 20 and 30-year-olds, maybe you have some financial advice that you would like to share. And we'll get our guest to react to that as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Millennials edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. Our regular financial planner, Kevin McKinley, is off this week. We are happy to have with us Sophia Berra. She's a certified financial planner in Minneapolis. She is an adjunct faculty member at her alma mater, Minnesota State University, Mankato. She's a member of the Financial Education Committee for the Financial Planning Association of Minnesota, and her website is genyplanning.com. And our next caller is Haley in Minneapolis. Hello, Haley.
Hello. I am calling with a question for Sophia. I just finished graduate school, so graduating with an MPH, and am considering jobs and job offers, and wondering what kind of financial questions to be asking employers in that situation, and how to know what kind of ranges to be looking for, and benefits and those kinds of things.
What a great question, Sophia.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Love that a Minneapolis girl is calling. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Haley. And congratulations on getting your graduate degree. That's really exciting. And I think that you're being really smart to really evaluate each offer individually. One of the things that I would encourage you to do is do some research online to figure out what the salary range is for people in your industry, and so that you know what you're worth. And I think that that's one of the biggest things to know, is that, you know, what are people in your industry getting paid? You have your graduate degree. How does that affect your pay? And you can look up that information on like salary.com, and I think glassdoor.com might be another one to look up. So, and then talking to your peers to figure out, you know, what range they're really looking for. And then don't be afraid to negotiate your salary. And one of the mistakes that I see a lot of young people make, and I made the same mistake, was to not negotiate my first salary. I was nervous and I really didn't know how to negotiate it. And I just thought it was a bigger number than I thought I would be making. And so I was just really excited. But I think you missed the opportunity there to really boost your income for years to come. So if you don't negotiate that first salary, then you miss out on, if you get a raise the next year, it's a raise on that, let's say it's $40,000 a year, it's a raise on that $40,000 instead of that, you know, $43,000 or $45,000 that you could have been making had you negotiated. And then you asked a great question, too, regarding your benefits package. And I would say before you accept any offer, to just ask if you can take a look at the benefits package or ask what benefits are included, because that can really change the benefits package, or that can really change, the total compensation that you're making. So one thing that we tend to look at is just the salary, and we don't factor in all those other things. So one company may offer a higher salary, but you have to pay for your health insurance and they don't have a company match. Whereas another employer might offer, hey, we offer this salary. It's a little bit lower, but we have, you know, a company paid health insurance plan. We have a generous 401k match, and you know, we have these other benefits as well that are available to you. So really make sure that you're getting an idea of the total compensation as opposed to just the salary.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, Sophia. It is helpful, yeah. And I think actually your whole mission is very helpful, because it's hard to know, it's hard to find answers to these kinds of money questions as a young 20s person. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Well, I have a newsletter that's totally free that's geared towards people just like you. So, you know, feel free to sign up for that. And it's different articles that I've written, and also different articles that are out there on money and millennials. And I also have another section that I call fun stuff. So maybe there'll be a link to some fun, you know, millennial quiz or a great YouTube clip on millennials.
And that's on, is that at genyplanning.com, Sophia?
Exactly. Okay. Yep. And then you can just, there's a just a little box there where you can put your name in, your email address in to sign up for my newsletter. So I encourage you to do that if you found this helpful today.
Thank you, Haley, for the call. Good luck to you. Chanel in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Chanel.
Good morning.
Morning.
Should I re-ask my question?
Oh, yes, please. What is your question? Are you a millennial, by the way?
Yes, I'll be 34 at the end of January.
Okay, and what's your question?
I'm almost up out of there. But anyway, I'm a single mom. When I originally went to college back in 2003, really wasn't knowledgeable about, you know, what schools to choose and things. I ended up going to a private college. I have over probably $40,000 worth of student loans. I consolidated my loans because I thought that was probably the best to do with so many different installment agreements just to try to get a grip on my credit report. But even though I consolidated my loans, I still see all these installment plans on my credit report. And I'm wondering, is that affecting me negatively?
So are these private student loans that you're talking about?
They're both.
Okay. So
private
usually...
and...
Yeah, private and public.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so just one of the things I would take a look at is just making sure that that you're up to date on all of your student loan payments.
Mm-hmm.
So
I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the biggest thing, is making sure that you're paying those payments on time every month. There may be an error on your credit report. I'm not sure. Or it just might be the way that they're currently reporting your payments. So one of the things that you can do is to pull a copy of your credit report and you know, call if there's questions that you have, and make sure that you really know what's on there and if something is affecting you negatively, or if there's an error that you fix that, but you write a letter and say, you know, these were the payments made, maybe there was a payment that they didn't get or something like that, or they have an old address, and making sure that those things are up to date. And usually when you consolidate, you can consolidate your federal loans together, and then you can consolidate your private loans together. So just making sure that the payments are getting made on time, and that they aren't negatively affecting your credit.
And Sophia, so I understand you would not be able to consolidate the private and the federal student loans together in one package. They'd have to be done separately.
Correct.
Yeah. So Chanel, does that?
I've never told that.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Then there's the last question. My plan for this $40,000, now that I've heard you talk about the loan forgiveness with going to school for teaching or something like that, so I am kind of getting into that. I'm going to school now. I'm in grad school online for my master's in education. My bachelor's is in business. But I'm thinking that if I got into real estate maybe, flip some houses and then go to school for in teaching, do you think that would help me kind of get out of this debt with all these student loans?
Well, the thing is that with private student loans, you don't have the same loan repayment programs available that you do with federal loans. So the federal student loan programs there's a lot more options, and that's where they have the public service loan forgiveness program, which is the PSLF that I was talking about earlier, where after 10 years, the balance of your loans would be forgiven as long as you've made on-time payments and qualify. But that would not help the private loans. So I would take some time, get really clear about what types of loans you have, which ones you owe on, and making sure you're up to date on all your loan payments, and then really figure out a plan to pay off those private student loans first, and then worry about the federal student loans once those private loans are paid off.
Good luck, Chanel. Thank you so much for the call. We're going to go now to Rebecca in Milwaukee. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
Okay. To me, it's a big one. I'm kind of in the same boat. I just turned 29. I graduated in 2011 with my bachelor's. I went to a private college. I am about, I'd say, a little over $100,000 in debt for a photography degree. I'm not in my field. I'm working part-time at a near-minimum-wage job. And I have private and federal loans calling me nonstop. I know I've defaulted on one. And when they call, they're asking for anywhere from like $600 to almost like $15,000, or $1,500 in payments, like in monthly payments. I make nowhere near that in a month. I guess I have no idea what to do.
Oh, Rebecca, I'm so sorry. Do you have anywhere that you can start, Sophia?
Yeah. You know, I think the first thing is just to really get clear about what you owe. And I think that that's hard to figure out. You know, what do I owe? What am I behind on? And so I would start by figuring the federal student loans out and just seeing if you can either put your federal loans on forbearance for a while or defer those so that you don't have a payment for those for a while, so that you can make sure that you're caught up on your private student loan payments as well. And then there are organizations out there that are there to help families. And, you know, one that I know about in Minnesota is called familymeans.org. And they have credit counseling and trained counselors that are there to help people with budget and credit counseling, with creating debt management programs, to do a credit report review and financial education. And they have offices in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And so that's a resource that I want to make sure that your listeners know about. And this could possibly help the last caller as well in terms of, you know, figuring out that credit report review. And I would definitely say to start there. Go on to familymeans.org. Find an organization in your area that can help with consumer credit counseling, because that's really going to be the place that you need to start, is to figure out, you know, what do you have? How is this affecting your credit? What do you owe? And then figuring out some sort of repayment program that's affordable and available to you.
Good luck, Rebecca.
Good luck.
Going to go to Ross in Madison next. Hello, Ross. What's your question?
Hello. Good morning. Thank you. I'm 24 years old. I graduated college in 2012. I've now just kind of got done with my apprenticeship stage, and now I'm a full licensed in my profession. So now I have a salary. I have some constants where I know my rent. I have $10,000 in student loans that my parents generously kind of paid off the federal portion last year, so I don't have to worry about interest. I'm just paying them directly. So now I have everything constant, and I have $4,000 to $5,000 in savings. I'm just wondering, at this point in my life, with what I can possibly do with now with a little bit of cash in the bank, and what are my options with that?
Yeah, this is such a great question, Ross. Thank you so much for calling in, because I think that there's a lot of people in your position that are, you know, just starting to make good money, a few years out of school, and wondering, what do I do next? So I think that, first of all, it's great that you know what your monthly expenses are, and you made that really clear. And that's an area that a lot of people are still, you know, unsure of. So the first thing is to get clear with your monthly expenses. The next thing is to do just what you did, which is keep some money in savings. And I think having, you know, like you said, $4,000 to $5,000 in savings is great. You know, I would say have at least 3 months of net pay set aside for emergencies. So let's say you make, you know, your paychecks are $1,000 every paycheck. You get paid twice a month. That's $2,000 a month. You know, having $6,000 to $10,000 in savings, not a bad idea, just because
there are some things that can come up along the way that we just want to make sure if you were to, you know, have a hospital bill or get sick or have a major car repair, that you would not have to go into debt to pay that. But once you have that, you know, 3 to 6 months in emergency savings, do you know if you have an employer retirement plan that you're eligible for?
Yes, after 1 year, there's a nice, generous 401k where I work at.
Great. So I would say make sure you're signed up for that for sure. And even while you're building that emergency savings, you know, making sure that you're signed up for that 401k plan is really important. And if you're contributing at least enough to get that company match, then looking into a Roth IRA, I think this is a great opportunity. So you can open a Roth IRA at any discount brokerage firm, Scottrade, Fidelity, Betterment.com. And these are all places that make it really easy to start saving for retirement. And the difference between a 401k through your employer and a Roth IRA is that a 401k is a pre-tax deduction. So you're putting money into that before you're paying taxes on it. And then that money grows, and when you withdraw it in retirement, then you have to pay taxes on that money that was in your 401k. Now, a Roth IRA works in the opposite. So you fund a Roth IRA after you get your paycheck. So that means it's funded with after-tax dollars. So let's say you get your $1,000 paycheck, and each paycheck you get, you put $100 into your Roth IRA. That money then grows tax-free, and when you withdraw it in retirement, you don't pay taxes on that money because you already pay taxes on that while you were young and while you put the contributions in. So that's one of the benefits of a Roth IRA that's really great. And can be just an excellent opportunity for young people.
Ross,
so I would say look into starting a Roth IRA.
Thank you, Ross, for the call. We have just a minute to go, Sophia. Maybe you can leave us with a New Year's financial resolution for millennials.
Great. So I would say, you know, make this year the year to really be aware of your finances. Figure out where your money is going. Sign up for that 401k or a Roth IRA, you know, get started saving for retirement, and figure out a plan to get out of debt.
Sounds great. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll come back sometime.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you so much, Joy. This has been a blast.
Our guest was Sophia Barra. She is a certified financial planner in Minneapolis, where she focuses on helping people in their 20s and 30s. She is an adjunct faculty member at her alma mater, Minnesota State University, and she is a member of the Financial Education Committee for the Financial Planning Association of Minnesota. Her website is genyplanning.com. Thanks very much to Bill Martins. He produced and directed this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Kevin McKinley will be back next week with another edition of On Your Money.